Blog Talk Radio.
The bloom, the swoon, the sugar's on your block. The planets letting flesh in the corners of New York. The ghetto, the meadow, the Mr. Butterflew. The honey bugs dug and licked the honey. For a bit, the lips with the soul and some jazz for your hips. The puff, the buzz, the lips be heavy slick. The mecca get a rush when the beats be very thick. The hands, the feet, the brown baby treat. The femmes fumble loose and drink the doodle juice. The steps, the flams, the planets got damn. The people get a grip with the tape from a jam. A nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk.
A nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk.
A nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk.
A nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk. Fat, the cool, cool cat, the psychedelic soul puts the planets on the map. The chic, the love, the far out name, the lack of the funk's the main, why we came. The boogie gets done, the colors won't run, the funk hits the square, the kids gotta come. The pizza with the pop, the West Wolf stop, the crew after crew that do the grasshop. The true cool is black, the new school is fat, the beats by the ounce, the funk by the pack. The groove is the fix, the jitterbug's fix. Hanging off the butts with the fat soul kicks. That's my nickel bag of funk, my nickel bag of funk.
A nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk.
I said a nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk.
Oh, a nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk. The wide, the hip, dig it, it's the trip. The loops, the scene, and the funkifying it. The sounds, the pounds, the stacks, the flares. The baggy, baggy jeans, the naughty, naughty hair. The twinkle in the eye, the kisses live and fly. The crew from the sky, the stuff that gets you high. The action, the work for the rhyme. We goes the whole nine. The papers won't rot, the vapors get got. The streets get the buzz, the funk off your block. The opium groove, the smacked out soul. The kicking it live, the fat gotta roll. With my nickel bag of funk, my nickel bag of funk.
A nickel bag of funk.
Yeah, it's a nickel bag of funk, a nick bag of funk.
A nickel bag of funk, a nickel bag of funk.
Nickel bag, a nickel bag. Ladybugger hit you with a nickel bag. A nickel bag, a nickel bag. Butterfly hit you with a nickel bag. A nickel bag, a nickel bag. Doodlebugger hit you with a nickel bag. A nickel bag, a nickel bag. DP's always hit you with a nickel bag.
Welcome to Headliner's Ball. This show's format gives both authors and audience alike the chance to entertain a deeper discussion regarding a choice selection of poems from the author's work. Headliners will perform pieces in their intended style. In turn, they will receive encouraging feedback from an all-inclusive panel of late-night poet callers. Additionally, there'll be a chance for listeners to inquire about intended inspiration, nuance, poetic device, and any other interesting details that the author was willing to expand upon. And as always, I am delighted to be joined by my talented, lovely co-host, Pam Ray, who has just called in to a New York District Court to fight Trump-topping 50 federal offenses from which she has been indicted. Pammy, I've always got your back. I know you're innocent. I'm a lawyer, and I'm willing to work pro bono. I'm not really a lawyer, but I will argue on your behalf any day of the week, my dear. How are you?
Well, you know, I truly, truly appreciate you, my friend, because in tough times like this, I need that kind of support. So, and I am doing great. I am doing great. I am looking forward to tonight's show, hanging out with you and other cool poets. You know, it's just going to be an awesome night of delving into and discussing poetry.
Usually is, and as always, I do. I see everything dang week. I'm excited. These two poets are extremely talented. I can't wait to have some conversations with them. Would you like to make some introductions? Are they online yet?
I would love to. We have with us Keith Palethorpe and Nuno Cardoso. And I would like to welcome you both, gentlemen, to the show. Glad you could join us.
Thank you, Pam.
Well, guys, we're not going to mince words. We tend to fire through each one of these hours, so I flip the coin. Nuno, you get to go first today. I have your first poem up on the board, so if you're ready, let's dive right into it.
Is it by the order?
Pardon me? Yeah, it's by the order.
Okay, yeah.
This one was collab or the one you had?
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah, this is a
collab. Where you are.
I'll read it with her. Okay.
Your body, my body, ours.
Be careful with me, and your title is, your heated throes of passion can lead me to slipping into something more comfortable as I dress myself in you.
Hands drop their thorns as our silks combine. There's a lack of words. One finger covers lips, soon to be shushed into howling.
Eyes wide open, ready for this escape, hiding in your moonlight, paling desires of want in need of rescuing, making wishes on each of your ribs, be my salvation and our eternal sin.
I cannot sleep, drink, eat, except for the concept of you. I'll eat, sleep, and eat to death.
Getting your fill, wade in the water of ours. Sip, eat, be me.
No fair. No fair to bring in a ringer on the first one, Nuno. I love that performance. That was amazing. Go ahead, Pam. Start us off, please.
Oh, yeah. Definitely a beautiful read and write by both you and Hope. You know, I love how this speaks on that sense of connection, of being comfortable with somebody. I really particularly like hands drop their thorns as our silk combined. There's a lack of words. One finger covers lips, soon to be shushed into howling. And I cannot sleep, drink, eat, except for the concept of you. Definitely a collaboration that flows beautifully. And I would like to know, tell me, since this is a collaboration, tell me a bit about your collaboration process between the two of you and how it works.
This was actually our first collab, and we weren't together yet. We had kind of just met, but the vibes were already there, you know. We were already kind of interested in each other, and this was like a way to explore that. And,
Very cool.
Usually we also go, sometimes we go a line for each, sometimes we go stanza by stanza, sometimes we just write, and then one of us will tinker it out, the little beats and stuff.
Well, I love the answer. Go ahead, Keith, dive in, join us. What do you have to say about this poem?
Well, I found the duet charming. I haven't had a chance to study the poem, but I take it it's a love song, and I thought it was very compelling.
Totally agree. I mean, it is a love song, and I mean that's really a great intro to what I wanted to say about it, because when you talk about duets and how beautiful lyrical duets are, somehow you two crazy lovebirds were able to create that feeling. I mean, I got chills on the fact that you guys handed this off the way that you did. And it did have that dance. It did have that salsa. It did have that tango between two people that are exploring each other and diving into love. And I like this question about your history of collabing, you know, and the fact that this is early on in your guys' relationship. When things are heightened, when you're feeling out the boundaries, love that everyone wants to be storybook, and it's really cool that you guys are able to capture it in prose, but then even performing it tonight, obviously the spark's still there. It's really enviable. So it's fun to have you back, Hope. Hope was one of our previous headliners, so knowing that her main muse, Nuno, is joining us tonight, it's a long time. I'm excited to hear more about what you have to offer. My biggest, and what I'm most envious about both of you, and I asked Hope this, and I kind of want to hear it from your perspective too, Nuno, is when you have a partner, a best friend, a soulmate, whatever Hope is, however you want to describe what Hope is to you, and you both share that creative spark, you're able to feed off of each other and fuel that muse, that inner muse, either if it's about each other or just having that person that's so close to you that shares the love of writing. Can you kind of expand on what that means to you and how that helps your craft?
Well, we're different writers. I write kind of about everything that's going on. Like, I like to call it the poet's asshole. Because, you know, you pull it, sometimes you drink a cup of coffee and you get meaning out of it. And she's more like a romantic and more of a, her feelings, you know, like might be dark or love or whatever it is. Well, I go and I talk more about what I see and I try to take meaning out of it. And we that contrast when we write together is very good, and it's very good to have a partner like that, because there are times when she's talking all right and she'll be like complaining about it, you want help? And she's like, no. And then she's like, okay, help me. And then, like, well, sometimes I'm stuck, and sometimes I ask for help, and sometimes I do the same thing. No, I'll get it, you know? So it's very good. So sometimes to get you out of being stuck is very good. Not that we constantly help each other on our rights, but, we do when we need to, and having, like, that sort of pillar is very, very, very useful, very good.
I'm jealous. I think it's a great answer. And Hope, I don't know if you're still on the line. Would you like to comment or add anything about the background of this poem or what it means to you?
That poem was it was very fun to write. It was stepping. I was at the point of thinking like I wasn't going to write anymore, and most of my poems prior to that were very dark, and it was just very easy and flowed out really quickly. When we write poetry together, it's always comes out very, very fast, very easy. And I think that's what people, when they read it, can feel that flow. And because it's that deeper connection. And we were starting to do with the visual with it, with like the way the lines were flowing and stuff like that. And it was a great first collab, and led into wonderful things.
I think it's a beautiful collab. Pam, if you and I sit down, do you think we can make sparks fly like this or what, sister?
Sparks, are you kidding? We would be like Mount Vesuvius. We would be covering people in flames and ashes. That's how hot we would be.
I didn't know till the end of the comment if Mount Vesuvius meant it was going to be a good explosion or a bad one. I love the poem, guys. You know, that was a great start. I got your next one up on the board ready when you are. It is Monday through Sunday.
Okay, Monday through Sunday. As tiny girls dance on the grilled light brown grass, I think of sledgehammers banging on the walls upstairs as I count the thumps and the drills and murder. How many men are working and how many can I kill by myself? Lips tap on the bottleneck of warm Sagres Portuguese beer. They also kiss a glass of cheap garden gin without tonic water, with ice boulders larger than my round glass and life in its own grandeur and simplicity. And then comes the neighbor with the tonic water and the lemon. We sip it and we get drunk on it as he offers me grilled meat. I'm more of a drinking guy than I'm a meeting guy, I say. He chuckles and tells me to taste it at least. So I dig on a spare rib pork piece with fat around it Then Mistress Death herself whispers to me as the wind blows from north, south, west, and east. You know, we're not that far apart from one another. We dance and we laugh and we drink, but here I am still alive, drunk as a camel on an oasis, kicking the dry, dying leaves with my burning hoofs. Half an hour late for work, I decided to Uber. €8 fee from the 500 I still have left from all my responsibilities. I hop on the Uber. He drives me to work. I arrive and clock in 1 hour late. Anyhow, I was still the most efficient worker in that warehouse forsaken by any god brave enough to face me.
I love how that ends. Go ahead, Keith, you want to start us off?
Yes, it sounds like Bukowski to me.
Oh,
and
gosh.
I've just gone off on the wagon again, so it's very timely for me, the poem, and I loved it. I have yet to use an Uber, but I'm looking forward to the experience now that they took away my clamshell phone and I've got an honest-to-God smartphone. So my next adventure will be trying Uber, but not to work. I've been retired for 20 years.
Welcome to the future, Keith. I love it. I love the comments.
I'm catching up. I'm catching up.
Wonderful comment. Very well said. And you're probably going to hear me. Nuno, I apologize ahead. I repeat myself. I tend to repeat myself 1,000 times during these headlines. But yeah, this is. I love your style. I'm excited that we get to explore this more with you. But you're my modern Buko, and I love. Well, and the reason I say that is just because the style, true, but also grit. I love people that just make grit of every day, nuance every day.
Well, I'll tell you my secret.
Pardon me? Go ahead.
What? Oh, I thought you finished. go on.
Yeah, no, and specifically, what tended to bug me about Bukowski is when he got a little bit too much into it. And what I noticed here about you is you weren't afraid to highlight the nuance of poetry, the beautiful part of the art that makes it sing-songy, that makes it beautiful. And the specific examples I have is when it was simple repetition that you did it, and even the way that you kind of presented it. And I can't find the first instance off the top of my head, but the second one was, we dance and we laugh and we drink. And the way that you just kind of presented that in poem, it kind of was that dance. It was that dance. I don't know how else to put it. I felt that that was a very beautiful part of the poem. The fact that you weren't afraid to take something that's gritty and still make it beautiful, because that makes it all the more relatable. I really dug it. And I guess my question for you on this is, this is a very autobiographical recount, and I want to know, when you're writing pieces like this, how much of this is true and how much of this are you making out of, how much is fictitious imagination?
All of it is true. Nothing's fictitious. Like, I do go, like, a little bit abstract on my metaphors. For example, as tiny girls dance on driver, that is like my neighbor. I was in the party of my neighbor's, like, it was his daughter's birthday party, and he invited me because I was like, I came out because the upstairs, right above my room, there's construction work on an apartment, like, been going on for 1 month, and I'm hearing them, like, you know, I'm hearing the construction, and I'm actually thinking and counting how many noises I hear at the same time, so I can figure out how many of them there are and how many I can kill, you know, because I'm super mad. And then my neighbor invites me, and the tiny girl thing is her dancing and, you know, partying. She's very little, a little girl. And that whole conversation is true, and everything is true. And the dry, burning hoofs is like my – I was having, like, I think it was nerve damage from alcohol drinking.
and the soles of my feet were burning. All of this is true. I just like talk it like metaphorically. Like a lot of people think my work is very abstract when it really isn't. But you know, they don't have to know what's going on with me. But yeah, everything is true.
I love that. I love that it's so true. And every time we talk to poets about that, and we get into this part about fiction versus truth, I guess wrong 100% of the time. So it's fun to know this is a true recount, and it's got to be fun to look back with an eye of admiration about how crazy. So great answer, my friend. Hope, do you want to dive in and comment on this poem?
Me? I remember the day, and I also use Nuno's life when I write poetry, so I had written a poem about the sledgehammers because I could hear them. And, it's I think his metaphors are so unique to where it makes such a unique picture in your mind to where you have to grasp at the words if you want to really see where he's coming from. But it's such a vivid images that he creates with his wordplay, and also hearing his reads, he always brings his poetry to life to another level from just reading it on page. I always enjoy him.
Beautiful comment. Very well put. Go ahead, Pammy.
Yeah, this is an amazing write. I like the straightforward style and how it's raw and gritty, but at the same time just has a great sense of humor to it. You know, especially in lines that say, I'm more of a drinking guy than I'm an eating guy, I say. He chuckles and tells me to taste it at least. Wonderful lines there. And the end, too. Anyhow, I was still the most efficient worker in that warehouse, forsaken by any god brave enough to face me. Wonderful biting lines and very well done. And my question for you is, I'd like to know, Nuno, how you got started writing poetry.
I've been writing for a lot of years, since I was very little, but it wasn't poetry. I started, like, songwriting, because I'm also a singer. At the time, I didn't know how to sing, but it was my dream, so I started writing lyrics. And then I started writing short stories, all in English, even though it's not my main language. But then I started reading Portuguese poetry, and I started writing it. And then I published my book. And after publishing my book, I realized that I was shit. So I started reading a lot. And I learned a lot, and I studied a lot, and I copied a lot of poets. The thing about Bukowski that you mentioned, Bukowski is my favorite writer. And, you know, I think I got a style down to a T, and he's not the only poet, and that's my secret, in my opinion. I've got many poets that I love that I've got their styles, like, down, you know? And I mix them. I mix them all together, you know? I'm like all the poets.
Very cool.
I think
cool.
That's what makes me... I think that's what, like, when people say I'm so unique, it's because of that, because I've got so many styles, and I write in so many different ways that people just like me.
I can definitely see that.
I love that answer. You know, I think that's beautiful. I mean, I think diving in and learning from the greats is the best way to hone one's own task. And in reading your body of work and reading your set list tonight, or that you're presenting tonight and your other stuff. You've obviously developed your own style from gleaning from the greats, and I think that's the best way to learn. And I think I'm still in the shit category of writing, but I aspire to transcend, my friend. Great answer. Your next poem, Tales of Crumbling Concrete, is up on the board, ready when you are.
Okay. Tales of Crumbling Concrete. The walls around me speak fullest truth, right? Walls naked of feathers must tilt their heads up and open their beaks, waiting for a mush of chewed-up worms to slide down their throats. Tweet, twat,
Look at them still on the shelves after I publish them. The walls around me lie like a hiss from a wildcat also, right? Fireflies outside scream inside the lamppost light of a dying star, reminding me that LSD is forbidden, yet the puss does not bat an ear. Oh, fellow reader or young poet, if only you knew that eating at my table is a dangerous place to take inspiration from. Do you not taste the mold? Here, I'll allow you to lick the walls. Now, savor it on the tip of the tongue. That's right. Smack your teeth on it. Melting, are they not? Do you see the walls sloshing down like gray mold lava? Hot it is, hot it is. This pile of moldy muds that I am. Obsidian poem of fast downpour rivers. Drum rolls accompany the crack of a tulip, inferior to three but superior to love itself. Father, help us all, for I cannot tell shit from flies. Droppings could grow wings and buzz around my ears on a summer day, and a thousand eyes could peep at me from the pool in the toilets in which my bum rests. I could not tell. Do you weep in the solitude of your white fluffy pillows as I forge this poem atop Babylon? I do not, and neither do the walls in my room. Do you?
And I smiled so much the first time I read this. And then hearing you perform it even better, especially with the onomatopoeia-ish, the instances of the sounds that you made just gave me even a greater giggle on this reread. I loved it. And I love crazy poems like this because I love throwing myself into the mayhem of it, the craziness of it, the wild mushroom experience of it all. But I'm dying to know the story behind it. So I kind of want you give you the microphone and have you tell us what's going on here and what it means to you.
Well, first off, the name is kind of a joke. It has a serious meaning, but it's also a joke. Because Tales of Crumbling Concrete, my mind's crumbling, kind of. And also it's because the poem fell from concrete to abstract on Autoring. And the first stanza, it's about my book not selling, and I'm talking about that. Then the hiss from the wildcat and the lamppost light of a dying star reminding me that LSD is forbidden is I had an issue with taking LSD for quite some time I did have an issue with psychedelics. And it's about me wanting it, but also not giving in to that temptation. And then the third stanza is like, there are some people that look up to my writing, and I'm telling you, if you're going to get inspired from me, it's basically me telling them that be careful, because the way I jump in my own mind and I talk about myself and I analyze my own mind and my own feelings and whatever it is that I'm going through, I go to very dark places, so it's a dangerous place to take inspiration from, eating at my table. And then I go by exemplifying on the rest of the things, like lick the walls, it tastes like mold, you know, and all that. And then it kind of goes on from there, me explaining, right? Kind of that.
I love to walk through it. I think that's great. Yeah. No.
Can
thank
I
you
jump
for
in?
Standing upon... Yeah. Okay, go ahead. Do you have something you want to interject? Go right ahead.
Jeremy, yes. I was thinking of, first of all, the crumbling walls made me think of Haiti and the disastrous earthquake there. But you know, I recently was reading Walt Whitman, The Compost, the idea that in decay and is regeneration, and I felt a sort of kinship between this poem and Whitman's The Compost, which was a poem he wrote late in his life, looking toward his decline. But in a very, I think, optimistic note, I think this is really a dark poem, but an optimistic poem.
Hmm. I actually never read Walt Whitman, but it's more of a cautionary tale, in my opinion.
Whitman starts out unfathomable, but later on his poems become sort of understandable, at least to me. And that was one at the close of his life that I thought was relevant to your poem.
I love the fact, Keith. I love the fact that you're picking up on something that you recently found. So, Nuno, I think it's a wonderful. Thank you. Hope.
Hey, Jeremy.
I really.
Just so you know, yeah. I'm really sorry to interrupt, but just so you know, Jeremy, you're breaking up quite a bit. I don't know if that's happening to everybody, but.
Yes.
Okay. All right, go ahead, Hope. Sorry.
No worries. I find it to be so fantastic. I love his use of onomatopoeias and just the overall, the speaking of the insecurities, peeling at the darker recesses of your mind and just putting it out there for people to know, like, this is what I am, this is what it is. I think it's really bold, and I think it's amazing. His use of onomatopoeias and his rights, they're just always, I find them to be so brilliant. It makes the images stand out even more to me personally.
Wonderful comment. Can you hear me better, guys? Am I sounding clearer now?
Yes.
Sorry about that. Sorry about breaking up. Go ahead, Pam. You want to make
a comment? I'm hearing you.
Yes, I would love to comment. First of all, I like what everyone had to say, and I liked Keith's observation on the comparison to Walt Whitman and the tone of the right. You know, this was just one of those rights that absolutely had to be on the show because it is a performance piece. You know, as much as it is fun to read, it's even more fun to hear. You know, I just think this is a wonderful rite, looking into the mind's eye, so many creative lines throughout. I did like the performance of it. I also like, oh, fellow reader or young poet, if only you knew that eating at my table is a dangerous place to take inspiration from. Do you not taste the mold? I like the questions brought in there that makes the reader think along with you. So just an amazing write those lessons that we learn throughout life. So very well done.
Great comments, Pam. Nuno, we're already halfway, brother man, so I want to give you a chance to shamelessly plug yourself. You had mentioned that you've already written a book. You have something published. Do you want to say, first of all, tell us about your published work and how we can get a hold of that, and then please let us know if there's, besides here on AP, is there anywhere else we can enjoy your poetry?
Well, I got my Facebook, which is... Nuno Cardoso Poetry, and I've got my Instagram, which is I Died, You Watched, and my book, it's in Portuguese, and it's not very good in my opinion. It has good ideas, but as a whole, I wouldn't want anyone to give money to the vanity publisher that I published in, especially for something I wrote 10 years ago.
such an inspiring plug, Nuno. I encourage everyone not to listen to Nuno. Look him up on Instagram, look him up on Facebook, and definitely support his work. He's a very talented author. I think he's being a little too self-deprecating, because anything he puts out is a lot of fun to read from many different perspectives. So let's all support him. Nuno, your next poem, A Warm Reception, is up. Ready when you are.
Yeah. A Warm Reception. My hands and arms shed their prickly thorns that grew out of old scars given by the war of a former stabs of life. The stems of a poet growing old, trapped in a body of youth, extend and bloom just to touch your soft maracuyá skin. Even if passion fruit is one shy kiss away from thousands of miles crossed by naked talons, dozens of hours stuck in clouds that carry rain, seeds of sangria to stroll on and trip on, drunk diced fruit that floats on your words. I say, cast the first rock of you love me not, for I have faith that your palms will open and the stone will slide down your fingers just as the wind blows your name every time a leaf is carried by the wind to fall underneath the airport entrance where we first met. While my chapped lips touch yours and kiss day into night and dusk into dawn. California king size hay, block of sleep, ready to be crafted and ruffled by the beaks of two bluebirds of fate, merging in a storm of fire igniting love once again. Let me poke the blaze with my iron and steer it. Keep the flame going and never let it die into ash. Let our poems enlace with one another as letters curl together and tie us on spring nearing summer wine. Breathe me your essence of spiced chicken wings while I drizzle buffalo spicily sauce over them. A Texan welcome to Portugal's boy, rising hope.
I love those closing lines. Go ahead, Hope. You're first on this one, please.
I'm biased, so, but I like the way, like, as I was always, I'm reading Nuno from before, I was always a fan of his poetry. I always tell him, like, he was my favorite poet. So knowing that he references other poems in poetry, just to tie and tie them together, I think it makes an even broader image to his whole work of body of poetry. I like the images that he uses and the metaphors that he uniquely picks, like the naked talons, the drizzling of the spicy sauce. Like, those are so playful, but you get such a striking image to where you know what it is. Like, it can be tongue in cheek, and it's very, it's just so uniquely done. And so, and I always love hearing him read his poetry because he brings it just to another level.
And it's okay to be biased. It's okay to have fans call in, especially close fans, to celebrate the poets that are headlining. So your comments are more than welcome, Hope. I love it. Pam, go ahead.
Yeah, I think this is absolutely a wonderful write. I mean, it's heartfelt. It's a beautiful love poem with just a wonderful sense of connection to it. I really like, I say, cast the first rock of you love me not, for I have faith that your palms will open, the stone will slide down your fingers just as the wind blows your name every time. And of course, I like that you bring her name in at the end and the little tidbits here and there that we know are about Hope, that they speak so strongly of her and your love for her. Just a wonderful write. How does it feel to be so completely just raw and honest when it comes to emotions and have everybody know how you feel about your love and about, I mean, because you do, everything you write about, whether it's your love for Hope or the beer you drink, or the energy drinks you drink, or whatever, you know, it's right out there for everybody. And does it ever make you feel nervous, or is it something you don't even really think about?
No, absolutely not. I'm never nervous about it. Just because I'm very straightforward. I'm very direct as a person. Like if I see something wrong, I'll say it. That applies for everybody, even myself. And I don't have any problem sharing anything about myself. I'm pretty much an open book.
That's awesome.
No, and it definitely comes through. I think it's a great question, Pam. Keith, your turn to comment.
Well, I was thinking that I heard this is a sort of manifesto and celebration of life and poetry in general. I thought it was a driving sort of rhythm to the poem that was, you know, invested with a good deal of conviction. Which all sounds not very direct, but I appreciated the poem, and again, it reminded me a little bit of I Sing of Myself, but I'm sort of hung up on Whitman tonight.
I'm giggling along because it's okay. I think there's a lot of horses to hitch your wagon to than Whitman, so bring Whitman. Much appreciated. I love that. And I like what Pam touched on, because I was kind of struck in the same vein. You know, I mean, yeah, you're honest. And we've run across other headliners before that are unabashedly honest with their emotions. And to me, it's an enviable trait. I think that's how you connect best with your audience, is when you're unabashedly able to put your heart on your sleeve. This is what I'm about. And I think it builds very strong, loyal fan base when you're honest and true with your emotions. Continue along her line of questioning. When you do this, are you ever hampered by your thoughts? And I guess you've kind of already answered, but I just want you to talk more about it. Are you ever hampered by your fear or your concern about what how your audience will receive your words? Or are you just going to be, this is me, this is Nuno, I'm streaking the quad, love me for what I am? I mean, is it ever in the back of your mind when you're putting together words?
I'm not really worried about, like, I've written a poem about this, like, on an interview I gave. People ask me, I know it's not the question, but I think it answers it. In the interview, I got asked if I wrote for shock value, and I said, no, I don't. I write what I write, and if people don't like it, then it can just turn the page, you know. I don't really worry about it. The only person I've ever worried about writing, and it's the reason I started writing for AP, was writing about my father and some stuff that happened to me, you know, education-wise. And that was the only person that I was ever afraid of judging my work or hurting his feelings, was my father. The rest is, you know, pretty much fair game.
No, and I won't dive too much deeper into that, but I know the feeling. No, I know when there's certain poems that you put together that kind of make it cringeworthy if a certain audience member would read it. So, no, I appreciate that share because, yeah, it comes through, though, buddy. I mean, I guess what I want to do is ultimately applaud your unabashed courage for putting your emotions out there the way you do. So that's a great answer. Beautiful answer. Your next poem, Rehearsing for a Play Called Mind Your Own Damn Business, is up, ready when you are.
Rehearsing for a play called Mind Your Own Damn Business. The mobs of mist whisper to an actor that weeps tiny downpour. The children toil in the slave theater, rehearsing for a play called Mind Your Own Damn Business. Water drops slither and crawl down pallet stickers that pierce this poet's eyeballs and worm their way down dairy products. MasterChef yogurts, eggs, and cheese talk to me and confess that no scalpel can puncture or slice off Bomberman out of an inoperable gray angioma.
that greets a mother of two bluebirds that have cut off the wings of the morning sun. The benign ticking time bomb grants peepers multiple stop signs, two roads leading to two hospitals, to the hospital penitentiaries, many homes with children and multiple husbands, yet only one of each is palpable. Pregnant hormones shield volatile bangs of a woman's prophecy with the birth of a sunflower that blooms for 7 years. Maria, the covenant dove. Gods have been merciful on Chocapic fire petals that chocolate their way down to a morning cereal kind kiss of offspring. Let me jolt down these poems, these faint shards of memories broken by cocktails of foolish dreams, pink risperidone and white Zoloft devils mixed with beer with acid rains of rainbow squares and grass of hash planted by farmers with knives that failed to remove this maternal worry out of this poet's mind.
Wow. You home run hit every ending with your poems. I love it. Go ahead, Keith. Start us off, my friend.
Well, I am impressed with the imagery here, and I wish I followed better the theme of the poem. I'm going to have to go study it, but I am impressed with the delivery and the general nature of the poem. I need to study it better.
Which is a fair assessment. I mean, I think we throw these poems at people on Headletters Night, and I think that's the ultimate compliment when a fellow poet hears one of your work, Nuno, and they want to take a second pass. They want to digest a little bit more. So there's a lot of value in that comment, Keith. I appreciate it. And I love it too, Nuno. I mean, I think, once again, there's a love of language that you have in this. And what really impresses me is that you're bilingual. And this is another key point that we touched on with Hope, but I kind of want to get your take on it. I aspire to be bilingual, but I'm not even anywhere close to the level of masterfulness of multiple languages that you have. And I kind of want you to talk about that. What is your experience about speaking in different languages, publishing work in different languages, and how it affects your work in general?
It's good, especially for writing, because in Portuguese we have a lot of sayings that aren't in American or even English, British English. They're just like unique to the language. And once you insert those things, those little things, into the American thing, I think it enriches it, you know. So I think the same goes for mixing English with Portuguese the other way around, you know. It's the same thing.
And that's true.
Oh, my God. Your language is Portuguese?
Yeah.
I played tennis with a fellow named Carlos Borges, who is from Portugal. He was a soccer star before he became a mathematician, and I was convinced that your accent was Portuguese. So once more, I'm right.
I love it, Keith. And maybe you could talk to Nuno offline, and he can give you a couple key Portuguese phrases to throw at your tennis mate there. I love that.
I'll spring them on Carlos.
I think that's very cool. And I think that's cool, too, because there are idioms. There are little sayings that you have from other languages that translate in a different – there's a different twist to it. I know exactly what you're talking about. I think I've got to go back into my memory banks and remember the ones that I used to love that would always tickle my fancy about learning a different language and how they looked at things. But, Nuno, the fact that you picked up on that and you're going both ways with it, it's a fun look at both language and culture. So I think that's a fun answer to my question. I appreciate it. Go ahead, Hope. You're up.
Can I toss in T.S. Eliot was multilingual, French, Italian, English, who knows, perhaps some others, but he mixed Italian quotes from Dante, among others, into his famous English poems.
I think there's value to that, Keith. I mean, I think it's a great comment because, again, I know that Hope is with us, and I know she's so close to Nuno, but she did that a lot of in her work, too. So I love it when poets bring other languages and the dance and the sound play of everything they do. So great addition. Go ahead, Hope. You get to talk.
This poem, to me, it makes me emotional reading it. I think it shows another side of Nuno where he is speaking more of something raw and emotional and close to him. He's sharing a side of him. It's not just about, it's not about depression. It's not about getting drunk. It's not about dealing with bullshit at work. Like, he's sharing, like, a personal side, his family, and, like, something that he's afraid of. And I always admire that in reading people's poetry, especially from a male's perspective, to show that vulnerable side, to show that side of this is something that I'm afraid of, this is something that's happening, and this is something that's real, and this is something that when I heard these news, it brought me to feel this way. And the metaphors that he uses in his wordplay, and it also, like, I could clearly see him sitting at work, hearing news, and it bringing him to his knees. So that's what I admire about poetry, and his poetry in particular, to where he makes such striking images to where it's like, oh, it just hits you so hard, and he pulls you along more and more, because it's always like the first stanza, it's like a pow, and then he keeps taking you, and if you're almost out of breath from by the time you get to the end of it because of the whirlwind he takes you through with the emotion, with the images, with the metaphors. I think he's just brilliant to me, I think.
Girlfriend or not, that was a beautiful comment, Hope. Wow. What a wonderful comment. I love that. Go ahead, Pam. What do you have to say?
Oh, this is a great write. And I do have to agree with Hope that it does show a different side to Nuno. I like the imagery in this. It's another one it's raw and real. It spoke to me on the idea of a world that's filled with broken pain, of families that go unnoticed. But it also speaks on the idea of depression and, you know, struggling. I think struggling to sleep and struggling to understand yourself. I like how you bring in the everyday imagery, like the master chef yogurts, eggs, and cheese. Talk to me and confess that no scalpel can puncture a slice off bomber man out of inoperable gray anatomia. I don't know, it feels like the whole idea of just the imagery makes me think of the mind going mad, you know, so just an amazing write. And my question for you is, I know earlier you had mentioned that you were very inspired by Bukowski, but you also had other favorite classic poets. So I would like to know, what are some of your other favorite classic poets?
Pablo Neruda, Fernando Pessoa, at the moment only those three come to mind. Because I read a lot of the same guys. What?
Oh, I said those are a good three.
Those are the ones that I read the most, like most frequently. I've picked things from other. I like to read poets that I don't like, because I'll pick up what I like, and I'll think about why don't I like this? Why doesn't this work for me? And how can I make it work? So there's more. There's a lot more poets, but the ones I don't remember are the ones that I didn't like most of what they wrote.
Makes sense to me.
No, I see the romantic of Neruda in here, so that I can definitely pick up on that. And I like the fact that you're able to have a critical eye on poetry. I think that's an impressive thing to say. I mean, it's easy to be a critic, but you're using a critic's eye to enhance your own love of the craft, which I think is a different way to look at it. So I think that was a very insightful comment. Great question, Pam. All righty, Nuno, I think we have time for one more, for sure. To Father a Couple is up, ready when you are.
Okay. Father a Couple. The clay is softly molded with words. A father knocks with worn-out knuckles at the door as the moon's round about the earth. The warmth burns like a bright fire, centered between the ribs of a newborn boxer. Flick the switch inside, the dusty fuse box, and click, let there be light. Today, a teacher of the glass of juice. Tomorrow, the head of the glass of scotch. I renounce an awful access to the spirit. May the sins of the buried father, or mine, never enter your walk alongside Christ. Kids dip their toes in both genetic pools just enough to woo any pair of lusting eyeballs. Sharp steps on the ticker crack the crimson fire. High heels will click and clack on the floor. America's silver clinks and clanks on the bag. Ashes have just been flicked out of the bud, but women will undoubtedly gauge roses to Peter. Dread not, little metal bands. Nuno's not here to judge. I'm not that kind of father. Shush now. It's okay. Children, you may weep to me. I know nothing about what comes after. I leave that to your mother. She has seen it more than once. Gates, clouds, and pearls. I know only of hellhounds spending their nails on black rocks. I know only about whiskey bottles and glasses getting drunk in bars or shops. Ice cubes that dilute the gray of all unwise pops. Beer cans that fizz enough to foam and drop. Showering cockroaches on the spot. Filling bellies with tales of how grapes lie in their sleep. And rats that scream out squeaks trapped in by fairies of cheese. I know only about poems written in tough blue bird ink and tornadoes of fire burning in pens and papel. Children, listen to me. Allow me to whisper this white whale truth, for even if I'm not the best role model, this man is no longer a fool.
I have learned from my mistakes, is the author's note. Nuno, great read, man. Go ahead, Pam. Kick us off.
Did you say my name?
Yes, Pam. I'm sorry if I'm breaking up again. It's you, Pam. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, no problem. No problem. Just making sure. Yeah, this is beautiful. I really like how it's filled with so much wisdom. And, yeah, that AN is great. I have learned from my mistakes. I think we all have. Or at least if we're smart, we learn from our mistakes. And I thought this had brilliant imagery throughout. It was a beautiful, heartfelt write that felt, you know, very personal. And I like how it speaks on taking time to listen to children without judgment, but also on telling our children, acknowledging to our children that we are not perfect. And I think that's a really important message. And at least that's what I read in it, but I would like to know what this poem means to you.
To me?
Yes. Yep.
This poem, well, I'll have to talk about Hope's personal life, can I?
Yes.
Okay. This poem is about me taking like a fatherly figure to her kids, because I'm not their biological father or father at all. You know, I'm her boyfriend, and if I'm going to be something, they have to accept me. Not saying that they don't, but I don't know if they do or not. They like me, I'll say that much. And their father died, so that left kind of a gap of her being a single mother and me being her boyfriend and me being understanding, and I like to give them advice and all of that. I'm kind of feeling his shoes a little bit, and that's me talking about that, you know, that I myself am not the best role model because I drink, I smoke, I've done all kinds of mistakes, but I've grown. And what I'm asking of them is for them to listen to me, because even though I've made so many mistakes, I'm wiser for it.
Absolutely. I like that. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that with us.
Yeah, great answer, man. Go ahead, Keith. What do you have to say?
Well, I think the common thread in the poems we've heard is a sort of lack of self-consciousness, a willingness to disclose a sort of honest representation of oneself. And that's a hard thing to accomplish. I'm not sure that my poems are in that same vein, but I respect that very much, and I think it's the tone of this poem in particular, and I find it very compelling.
And I love that. I love that we're bringing together a couple poets that are not identical twins, Keith. So that's a great comment. I think we all appreciate each other's style. And I think that's a beautiful compliment just in that, the fact that you're willing to or at least identify that someone's different than you and you take joy in what he puts together. So I like that. Nuno, yeah. And again, I'm sorry I keep alluding to Hope, but I know she's with us. She spoke on the same topic that you just spoke on. I appreciate you sharing something so deep. It's beautiful, man. And you've done that all night tonight. You've opened up your heart, and that's what makes this show special, is when poets are willing and bold to put together a set list that gives us something, that gives us a greater insight, and it makes us want to read more. And that's the whole point. What I like about this, and it kind of ties on the earlier question that I asked you, is your masterfulness or your understanding of multiple languages. And I'm such a goofy, nerdy, wordy that I love when poets play with language. And you dove in deep on this one. Kids dip their toes in both genetic pools just enough to woo any pair of lusting eyeballs. I love the way that sounds. And then all the click and clack and tack and spank and rip and flick and the CK sounds that you have in the next follow-up is that craziness about being a parent. I mean, if you would have just put those letters together in some kind of nonsensical word display, it would have had the same feeling. And I love that. I love the fact that you made it so poetic because it really struck a tone with me on how you captured the moment with sound and the fact that you do it on two different levels, two different platforms of language, and your love of language just makes me smile, man. I love people that are into poetry for that reason, and it shines through. That, along with the harshness of Bukowski, the huge heart of Neruda, it's going to make your poetry soar, and you've definitely made me a fan, so I appreciate everything you shared tonight. What I want you to at least leave me with, and I always try to get this question in with all of our headliners, is what advice do you have for the rest of AP? What other advice can you give the rest of us aspiring poets on how you write?
This was the last the poem that I'm going to read, correct?
Yes,
before answering the question.
Yes.
Okay. I would just like to thank you all for the opportunity, for the comments. I like to say do things in the end of my, instead of going thank you, I like to thank once. So I would like to thank you all for the wonderful comments and the opportunity. And now to answer your question, you want my honest opinion. I'm going to piss off people. My honest opinion is to use AutoRank. I know AutoRank is hated by many, and I think it's because they get stuck on the idea because they get low AutoRank, and they're thinking AutoRank is telling them they're bad, when that's not the point of AutoRank. The AutoRank is getting you closer to get published, and it gives you very good tools to do it, and there's nothing wrong with using the tools. Do you think, like, all the famous poets didn't go to dictionaries and they didn't do research? Of course they did. It's ridiculous to think they didn't, you know. So I would like, maybe don't like try to do what I do and go AutoRank 10 out of 10. You know, that's quite hard. But, you know, I would do it for an exercise. But just try to do it, like, it will enrich your poetry, in my opinion. That's my honest. If you want to get better, like, read multiple poets. Read poets that you don't like, especially, and read poets that you like. Analyze, you know, if you gotta practice their style, you know, write like they do, you know, just don't publish it. You know, no one likes plagiarism unless it's private plagiarism. I think that's a great way to evolve, is to copy. And then when you got it down, start writing your own stuff, you know, and use AutoRank. I think AutoRank is the best tool that AP has got.
I'm laughing out loud as you talk, because yes, you're absolutely right. I hate AutoRank, but yet I'm a slave to AutoRank. So I think that's wonderful. And that's our first AutoRank plug, Pam. I love that advice. Wonderful answer.
It is. And I do like the honesty of that answer. And I've always been
absolutely
one who there's honestly two type of people that I have trouble with on all poetry. And those are the ones that constantly complain about AutoRank, and the ones that swear that no good poem can be a low AutoRank, because both of them are wrong, in my opinion. You know, you can have good poetry that is a low AutoRank, but at the same time, I don't think you can dismiss AutoRank, because I know some amazing poets that write like nines or highers, you know.
Yeah. No, I love that comment, and I love the advice, Nuno. Great. Hope, believe it or not, the way the cards got shuffled, you get the sign-off for Nuno's poetry. Go ahead.
What I thought about that poem?
Absolutely.
That poem, I think from the title to his painting, it carries an overall, like, spirituality to the whole of speaking wisdom, love, and knowledge and understanding to children. And I love that from, like, as soon as you look at it, the title, his painting, and the feel from it, it hits spirituality, it hits my Christian faith, our Christian faith, and it holds those values of, yes, I was this, but from this I've learned to become this. No, I'm not perfect. I'm never going to be perfect. But, like, I want to try. I want to help. My heart is open. So I love the vulnerability in it. I love his stance in knowing where he was and knowing what seeing to adolescence and being knowing that he can have a hand to help mold. I love the visual of the first stanza of knocking at the light fixture, like it's from Genesis. Like that's what I picture in my head, the opening of Genesis, let there be light. Like he has so many different quick lines that to me reference biblical, but have his own special, unique Nuno twist to it, to only he can do.
Beautiful. I love that. Nuno, It's been a pleasure, my friend. I'm glad you're stateside. Thank you for calling in. Thank you for your patience on waiting for a date that worked for you to headline. We'd love having you join us. I'd love to have both you and Hope join us for the second half of the show, because we have a wonderful poet ready, chomping at the bit. Keith, exit stage left. We're ready to enjoy your poetry, my friend. Go ahead and read it when you're ready.
Let me give you a little setup. On my page, there's a picture of a vulture on the wing associated with this poem. It is, I'm afraid, a sort of English sonnet. And at the end, there's a sort of a nod to Godot in the last couplet. So here it goes. Title is Exit Stage Left. My life is something balanced on a breeze, an updraft from the valley's rocky floor. And I must choose which slanting shaft to seize in soaring down the halls of Nevermore. I would not overstay my welcome here. The fondest guest soon wears upon his host. I've business to attend in other spheres, where time is not the thing that matters most. Oh, grant I leave a legacy behind that will not fade as soon as I am gone. A thing made not of mass, but rather mind. A story not of word, but rather song. So let us go with all our weight and will, while they continue laughing with us still.
I can't speak enough for sonnets. I do nothing but bastardizations of sonnets, and I love it when someone puts together one that works so beautifully as what you just presented. And I think you not only have some nods of Godot, anytime someone throws any kind of slight Poe reference, I tend to smile, so I hope I'm not miscuing that. But I want you to kind of tell us why this is your opening of your whole body of work. Why did this poem speak to you, and why did you choose to start off headlining with this poem?
Well, I think it features something in my experience with AP that's maybe a little different. I'm on a group called Constructive Criticism, and this sonnet was worked over by the collective group, which is probably several dozen people. So while I get to be the author, this is very much a collaborative sort of product, and it was, I think, my first sonnet, no, my second sonnet, but I find that the comments of other poets who are serious, I find it most helpful, and most of the things that I post on Constructive Criticism end up much changed and I have to say much improved.
And I got to follow up with that because I'm not that bold. I'm so pompous, I guess is the best adjective to use, that when another poet tells me or gives me constructive criticism, I take offense. It's hard for me to swallow. It's hard for me to be open enough to do that. So can you talk a little bit more about that group or how that makes you feel or what that does for your craft in being so open to let other people give that criticism and how it helps you mold what you put together?
Well, in a way, it's a kind of attitude. In my opinion, all poems are drafts, and I include in that the works of Shakespeare. And I'm always editing. In fact, I edited one of the poems I submitted a link to you pretty badly. I added a whole extra line. My stuff is sort of provisional, and every version is a draft of the next one to come. I find myself, you know, editing classics in my spare time, which I have a lot of, you can imagine. But I find the process very, very rewarding. And, you know, I think the being on the other end of the process, offering advice and suggestions and having a dialogue with other poets is a very valuable experience. And I think everybody kind of improves from it.
I love that attitude, and I love what you just said about every version is a draft of what's next to come, because, yeah, I feel that everything that I put out there is a draft, and I'm constantly reorganizing and re-editing. So maybe I need to look at myself, because I love the way that you just put that, Keith. I think that's beautiful. I really like that. Hope, are you still with us? Would you like to comment on this poem?
Yes, I'm still here. I liked the opening lines, my life is something balanced on a breeze and an upward from the valley's rocky floor. It gives, with the image, it gives such an overall view of how the narrator is seeing, and you see it from their perspective from that way. I like the whole thought in that. I think it's uniquely put that way. Just to see.
I think the vulture
the
is our family bird.
I like that. Wonderful comment, Hope, and wonderful explanation, Keith. Go ahead, Pam. Bring us together.
Yes, I really enjoyed this. First of all, it was a beautifully written sonnet, and I like your comment that you made on how it was a group effort, and you know, the idea of being open to corrective criticism. This made me smile for a couple reasons. First of all, the title made me think of Snagglepuss, the old cartoon, and second of all, that second stanza makes me think of a sign that my grandfather had hanging up in his house when I was a kid. And I'm kind of paraphrasing the sign, but it was something along the lines of guests and fish all start smelling after about 3 days. And that's what that made me think of, you know, but I just, speak, you know, on the idea of, I really like where you do say in that sentence, I would not overstay my welcome here. The fondest guest room soon wears upon his host. I've business to attend in other spheres. I like how this speaks on the idea of we make an impact with people and then, you know, we move on to wherever we need to be next. And I would like to know, Keith, how it was that you got started writing poetry.
You know, one of the poems that I might be getting to tonight, I wrote back in college at Willamette University 60-plus years ago. If we get to it, it turns out to be an oxymoron. It's a clean limerick, believe it or not. And that's how I started, and I had my anniversary. Kevin announced my anniversary on AP the other day, and I discovered that in the intervening year that I've been on AP, I've drafted, and I'm going to use that word, over 1,000 poems, which is kind of startling in that T.S. Eliot's total output is dwarfed by mine in the single year here. But, of course, quality does matter. That's how I got started in this game. I've been writing poetry for years. In fact, I ran across a cache of it that must be 60 years old that I'm slowly but surely editing into current form. But that's my story, and I'm sticking with it.
Very cool.
I knew we were kindred spirits, Keith. I am from the Palouse as well, so I've seen.
Oh, really?
I am.
The Scablands, the Palouse, love it.
Oh, I love the answer. Go ahead, Nuno. What do you have to offer?
Well, first of all, I like the rhyme, and I'm not really a rhyming type of poet, but I like the rhyme. I like when rhymes sound like they don't rhyme in the way, like, I don't like when things sound like fairy tales, you know, poems sound like fairy tales. And I also think, at least that's what I thought, I don't know if this is what it is about in reality, but this seemed to me like saying, accepting the end of life ending. Like, not as if you're dying, but as you're getting old and near the age of death. It sounded to me like one of those things, you know, like I've lived a good life, you know. I don't know if that's what it is about.
Yeah, I think you've got it, and a little more. I'm enamored of Robert Ardrey's statement that death is the right-hand maiden of life, and if life is good, then death must be good. You know, I'm appalled at people who think that somehow they would buy immortality if they could. You know, basically, the cycle of life is beautiful in itself, and aging and decline is a very natural thing.
Mm.
That's beautiful, guys. Great conversation. I love the comment, Nuno. And I love the answer, Keith. So let's keep it rolling. On Golden Pond, ready when you are.
As the author's note says, this is a Shaggy Dog story that was a favorite of my father-in-law, and I've sort of dressed it up as a poem. So I will accept part of the credit for this. It's called On Gall Dern Pond, and it goes as follows. Exiting Say Shushi on Monet's bridge across the obligatory koi pond, our hero, the type of guy who likes Xmas lights on his house in July, fumbled not the check, but his billfold, which flew like a wounded widgeon anent the icy billows below, headed for a watery grave more grim than puberty. But lo, what to his wondering eye should appear but a golden snout, to not only arrest his compact financial kingdom, just short of hyperfluidity, but also to lateral to a fellow koi adept and another, etc., until the peripatetic purse came to rest on a lily pad, where our protagonist could safely and snugly recover his losses. It was, the authorities informed him later, wait for it, the earliest recorded instance of carp-to-carp walleting. But wait, there's more. On the eve of All Hallows Eve, Alice and I stopped for Snickers at the local Save Mart. We each took a shopping cart as a stealth walker. Having stashed her purse in the car, Alice carefully secreted her billfold in her cart. Leaving Candyland for frozen foods, we somehow switched our carts, which shortly threw Alice into a predictable swivet over her missing billfold. Imagine our relief when it turned out, under the heap of Snickers, and the understandable rage with which Alice smote me about the head and shoulders. The cashier later assured us that ours was not her first case of cart-to-cart walleting and concomitant walloping. Bada boom.
My cheeks hurt. My cheeks hurt as I giggle the whole
thing. You want to tear them out. I know. You want to tear your teeth out.
Cheeks. I'm laughing. My cheeks are hurting. Go ahead. Go ahead, Hope. Start us off, please.
I like the story. You created so many details so we can clearly see the images that you're creating, and the level of humor in it made it more entertaining as you pulled the reader along into it. And I liked your ending. I thought the ending was quite cute.
Did you agree with the need for a sequel? I sort of thought I could do without the sequel tonight.
Well, I mean, if you have more to say, I think it's also fun when people, you know, make a poem and tie it in with another one, for sure.
I'm ready for the sequel, Keith. I think you had me laughing out loud through the whole entire poem. Go ahead, Pam. What do you have to say?
This is definitely great humor. I'm glad your father-in-law's humor inspired you to write this. And you definitely have a voice for reading out loud. I don't know if you ever go anywhere to, like, read your poetry in front of people, you know, like on a stage, but I can definitely see that, or if you have family that you read to. Great read, awesome humor throughout. I especially like, but lo, what to his wondering eye should appear but a golden snout, to not only arrest his compact financial kingdom just short of hyperfluidity. You know, there's certain words that you don't see enough of in poetry. And I have to say, in my opinion, hyperfluidity is one of those words. So excellent, right? And very well done.
Thank you.
I love that comment, Pam. I totally agree as well. Hyperfluidity is definitely on my list. Go ahead, Nuno.
Well, I like the storytelling aspect of the poem. I think it was well written. And I also love the humor, like everybody else, of course. But what I loved the most was really the like the homage you did to the father-in-law. You can see love, and he has passed, I think, because he has missed, right? And, well, I think that was my favorite part. It was like, you know, showing that love.
You know, I spared you folks a longer Shaggy Dog story that was read at his funeral all those years ago. Yeah, he was a real treasure.
I love that. And you know what? Humor is, in my opinion, humor is tough to translate in poetry. Another site that I was a member of way before my days at IEP had a whole category that was humor, and I would have the hardest time submitting into that group because I don't feel it translates right. But you proved me wrong, Keith. I mean, this thing, no joke. I was giggling the whole way through, and I think what you did, not only because of the written word, but also what Pam alluded to in her comment, is your performance and the pace. And when I read it the first time, I was able to feel it. But something that we've talked about before is there's a difference. And very similarly to what we experienced in Nuno's first poem tonight when he did the duet, it was so beautiful with Hope, and how that made me feel when I heard it performed as opposed to reading it. I felt this in yours in the humor aspect because your timing was spot on. Your pace, your rhythm, it gave me a greater smile even than I read it before. And it was, the authorities informed him later. And then, wait for it, the earliest recording instances of carp to carp walloting. I'm laughing out loud. And there is an art, and what I love so much about this show is getting the authors to read and perform their poetry, because we get to not only experience it reading it ourselves, but it's another layer of art to perform it out loud. It's a compounding thing that we talked about with Rex a couple of weeks ago, because he's such a great person to perform his poetry. I think it takes it to another level. And so, yeah, I applaud and agree with what Pam said in her comment, and just want to compound on top of that. I want to learn a little bit more about you, Keith. Can you talk a little bit about your process? When you sit down to write a poem, what does that look like? Is it on the keyboard? Is it handwritten? Is it in a specific space in your home? How do you come up with your work?
Well, you know, lately I have been drafting poems in response to honest to God contests. I'm addicted to the levels that Kevin has created. You know, I hope Nuno's endorsement of AutoRank doesn't destroy my favorite fun, which is on CC we've invented a person, a persona, a sort of cyborg known as Auto, O-T-T-O, Rank, R-A-N-K-E, and he is Kevin's alter ego, and we have a lot of fun with AutoRank, but I have to agree with Nuno. I've redrafted drafts to improve their auto rank, and I think it improves the poem in general.
Oh, great. I love that there's another bot. It's not even a bot. It's a creation out there that I've got to dodge. I'm sure there's probably hundreds of them here on AP. So I love that you guys are having fun with it all. I think that's a great addition to what happens here, the fun of creating poetry. So I applaud the spirit.
In fact, I did write a poem about AutoRank, but it's not
okay
with us tonight.
No, that's okay. We'll definitely look it up. I'm glad you're giving AutoRank's nod. What's the title of the – is the title AutoRank?
It is Inquiring Minds Want to Know. It's about Kevin and his unnatural relationship with AutoRank.
Well, put that as an asterisk, everyone, as another poem to read from Keith here on his set list tonight. No, I love it. I love the tongue-in-cheek of it all. It's great fun. To the tune of Putin on the Ritz, Mel Brooks, Eat Your Heart. Go ahead whenever you're ready.
a little setup here. It's about Ukraine, and it's satirical, and it may be funny as well. When Peter Boyle died less than a year ago, the main way of announcing it was to show the scene from Young Frankenstein where Gene Wilder and Peter Boyle are doing a top hat and cane routine of putting on the Ritz. So a little bit like Nuno's writing lyrics, I write parodies. This is a parody and a satire, and it's aimed at Putin. To the tune of putting on the Ritz, here it is. If Zelensky makes you ill, here's a bill that you might fill. If the footwear fits, Putin and the Blitz. Up to Plato, attacking NATO. Look at that tomato. If you smash them with your tanks, Turkey's tough will give you thanks, and he'll praise your wits, Putin and the Blitz. Should you nosh a tidbit called the Crimea, you're not claiming war is a panacea. Grab yourself a beer in the world. If the world gets on your case and you hate the human race, nuke the silly twits, Putin and the Blitz. Something must have failed in your potty training. You have but one hope of relief remaining, premature deplaning. If the object of your desire is the bogus Tsarist Empire molded by your mitts, Putin and the Blitz. If some women and children neglect to duck right, drill some vertical holes and inter them upright. Goodness, why so uptight? Putin, that's not Putin. You're dern tootin', Putin and the Blitz.
We're in luck. We're in luck, Keith, because if you did not know, every single show, Pam always chooses to sing a song for us. So following up this poem, Pam, would you like to go ahead and sing Putting on the Ritz for us?
Yeah, nice try there, Jeremy. Maybe someday.
Go ahead and start us off with comments then.
Yeah, well, I have to say this was very entertaining. It was a spot-on parody. You know, I do like how, you know, it is that idea of that bite what was the word you used to describe it? It's slipping out of my brain. The style, besides being a parody.
Oh, yeah, it's a satire.
Satire,
yes. And a parody.
A satire. And I think that is so important because I think a lot of times when there are serious things going on in the world, things that it's like are such bitter pills to have to swallow, they're easier to swallow when you present them with that, you know, that sense of humor, that satire, you know, and so that works really well for topics like this, in my opinion. I honestly kind of wish that I had still been you had been on All Poetry and writing humor poetry back when I was doing a humor poetry show, because I will have to agree with Jeremy what he said earlier. Humor does not translate well into poetry most of the time. So it was really a show that we struggled to get rights for. But I like this. I like how you speak up about modern times, and you know, it has that very almost like Saturday Night Live type feel to it. So what one of the questions I have for you is, I would like to know, I know you mentioned you were on a bit of a Walt Whitman craze earlier this evening, and so I'm going to guess he's one of your favorite poets, but I'd also like to know who are some of your favorite classic poets?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I started out not liking Walt Whitman. Leaves of Grass is sort of heavy stuff, but it got better as I went along. His stuff about the Civil War and so on became kind of part of my my vernacular, but you mentioned humor, and one of my heroes is Ogden Nash. There's a sort of parody of Ogden Nash later, if we ever get to it, but also T.S. Eliot and, of course, Dylan Thomas. And I actually try to, I don't know if I succeed, bring Shakespeare into poetry. I think it's still relevant today. I do not think, I just sort of, T.S. Eliot was probably as famous for being a critic as being a poet. And his view of the body of literature was that it's all coexistent today, and it should all be considered as a whole, not as some sort of linear progression. I find Shakespeare as relevant today as any of the modern poems. So that's sort of my legacy. I ran across a poet here. You mentioned, do I read poetry aloud? There's a sort of a bi-monthly poetry night in Davis. And last session, we had a fellow named Dana Goya, who I guess was Poet Laureate of California once upon a time. But he writes librettos for operas. That's kind of like the lyrics that Nuno was talking about, only I agree with his point, and that is that opera is the one form of art that brings together all of the senses in presentation. And you know, opera is rather neglected in America. You can think of Porgy and Bess and perhaps West Side Story, but opera has not been fully exploited in our art. And moreover, you wonder why the great poems haven't been set to music and presented as performance art. Eliot himself was a dramatic poet and later wrote Murder in the Cathedral and a number of plays, the Cocktail Party. It seems to me that performance and poetry go together.
That is so very true. That's very true. Well said there.
100%. I love the answer. No, I mean, lyricists are poets today. And I mean, my argument is look at rap music. One of the most profitable forms of music today is poetry. And there is lyricists, and we've talked about this on several shows, in which poetry is monetized. But no, I love that answer. I love the fact that you have an Ogden Nash nod, because he's one of my favorites. And of course, the Bard, I mean, he never gets enough credit because, yeah, it's very relevant. So beautiful answer, Keith. I really enjoyed listening to that. Go ahead, Nuno.
We're having a raging debate about rap music on constructive criticism right now. Is it poetry?
Well, about your poem, I like the like kind of musical-ish vibe and the humor. I like the social commentary. I think it's very accurate in the way that there's a truth behind whatever they're doing, you know, and they're kind of, you know, putting it away. So I like it.
You know, I wrote it some time ago. Putin and the Blitz. He expected to capture Ukraine in a sort of blitzkrieg, and now it's worn on into a long war, and that's probably a sort of war that he cannot win. He's kind of stuck on the horns of a dilemma right now. The other thing about this poem is I've had people, I'm not sure in the context of this particular poem, but tell me that politics has no place on AP or in poetry in general. And I reject that concept entirely. For one, politics is mainly about morality when you press it far enough. But I do believe that we've got to get over the idea that we don't talk about politics on AP.
Poetry has one rule. That it's that it has no rules. That's the only rule. So you can talk whatever the hell you want, you know?
Yeah, I've tried to get Kevin to pass a rule. I forget for what, but he demurs on every rule, doesn't he? And I guess that's proved to be a pretty successful business model.
No, and that's where I want to hit you up. I love the conversation. I want to keep it going because I say bullshit. I think politics does have a place in poetry. Money has a place in poetry. Humor has a place in poetry. And I kind of want you to, because you hit it on both of those in this, you put on humor and you put timestamp with politics, and I kind of want you to expand upon how that influences your style.
Yeah, when I said satire, people think that satire is humor, but satire at its best, like Jonathan Swift's A Modest Proposal, How to Prepare Irish Children to be Eaten, went on for 60 pages of rant. It was a total rant, and there was no humor in it. Philip Roth wrote a satire on Richard Nixon called Our Gang, and it is a difficult book to read because it is so grim and pointed and hilarious in spots, surely, but satire is misunderstood if people think it is fun.
Valid point. I like that comment. Yeah, because it can have a tang to it. Yeah. Wow. Great thoughts. I love the conversation. Go ahead, Hope. Would you like to contribute?
I literally laughed out loud once you started reading and you had it for putting on the Ritz. I thought it made it really clever to hear you and to keep up that beat to it. It made your write even more clever with what you're speaking about. I do believe that all topics should be written about. Poetry's made to hit whatever it is, if it's about politics, if it's about social interactions, mental illness, death, rape, all these things. We're supposed to talk about them. As artists, we're supposed to create from whatever we draw inspiration from. I think it was very clever of you to use the image that you used, the tempo that you used, and then with your wordplay for Putin, the way you played with the word with Putin on there, and it gave your poem like the timestamp of the era of this time of what's happening, to where, you know, our poetry is going to live forever. It's on the internet, you know, so everyone will see, like, this is how you felt during this time because you put a name on it, you know. I thought it was an overall really good write and funny. I really laughed when I heard you.
You know, it is a kind of a timestamp and a time capsule. You know, the when I first got on AP, there was a fellow named Arliste. You may know him. He wrote a Ukraine poem every day for a month. I forget which month, but it was early in the invasion, and that really stuck with me. He wrote a poem a day about Ukraine.
Well, it speaks of passion. No, that's very cool. And I like the fact that wonderful comment, Hope. But, yeah, it speaks to passion for sure. And that's what makes this whole site beautiful and the exchange beautiful as well, in my opinion. Buddy, I don't want to cut you off without giving you a chance to self-promote. We have you here on AP. Do you have any published work that we can support? Can you plug yourself away on any other place we can find your poetry besides here?
I'm sort of not monetized. I have put about a half a dozen poems in various editions of Kevin's collections that come out, what is it, monthly or quarterly? And they can be found there. But other than that, my AP page, which is under my very name, not a handle, has a lot of this stuff on it.
Well, Keith, you're a joy. So I encourage everyone to continue to support Keith Palethorpe. He has a presence here on All Poetry under his real name, under not a pseudonym. So continue to follow him, because we're not going to make it as far as we want to make it. The conversation is definitely engaging, and so I want to keep it flowing. Your next poem, What's in a Name, is on the boards, ready when you are.
This is the 60-year-old clean limerick, which is, as I said, an oxymoron. I have to introduce it with a reminder that the bard wrote in iambic pentameter. So it's called What's in a Name? The scribbler, intending no slammeter, but owning his muse was of an amateur, rejiggered his name and foisted the claim on his fan base. I am Bic Pentameter.
Oh, absolutely. Go ahead, Nuno. Start us off.
I really liked it. It's funny. It's short. It's sweet. You know, just straight to the point. That's pretty much what I have to say about it. You know, it's very straight to the point. It is short and funny. Yeah.
No, and I totally agree. I mean, limericks are beautiful, man. I mean, it's same as haiku, but on a different level. And they don't have to be dirty. But what I really dig is iambic pentameter. And I kind of want you to talk about that, Keith. I think you have a knowledge and appreciation for poetic device, poetic form, classic poetic form. Is that important to your writing? What is that? How does that influence you? How do you use it?
Well, you know, it's a funny thing, but on the group, I have taken to simplifying the pronunciation and spelling of words. Like poem has become P-O-M-E. For some reason or other, I'm influenced by Lewis Carroll and James Joyce, who were fascinated with how changing one letter in a word created another word that had no relationship to the first, like the word curse. If you take the S out of curse, it becomes cure. So those are the sorts of word interests that I have. And, of course, puns are my mother's milk. I live for puns, and I use them all the time, but I don't see one in here. Well, slammeter rhyming with amateur, I'm very proud of that. I mean, that is reaching for a rhyme if ever there was one. I like rejiggered. I use rejiggered all the time. But it's mostly just flotsam and jetsam. You know, when Nuno is saying that he borrows things, I borrow things from all over. I mean, some of my poems are just collages of other people's words, you know. I don't hesitate to steal a line, like, what to his wondering eyes should appear, you probably recognize as The Night Before Christmas in the poem a couple of poems ago. So that's really I'm shameless in this regard, is what I am.
I love that comment. Go ahead, Hope, dive in.
I really enjoyed it. It was nice and short, and it packed a punch. I think it holds true to your other writes. You have a unique style where you're playful, and you have your wordplay. So you keep that same type of funny and straight to it. So I enjoyed listening to you read this one.
Yeah, my watchword is that brevity is the essence of wit. And, you know, it's almost as if the more brief you can make it, as Ogden Nash did, the more wit there is involved. That
yes,
said, I'm breaking my pick on haiku. I'm no good at haiku yet.
That is a skill. Not everybody can.
No, we've talked about that before. I like that. I like that you have to be spry to execute a brevity that still keeps us alive. So I think you've done that here. Great comments. Go ahead, Pam.
Yeah, well, you know, according to the haiku police on all poetry, pretty much no one's good at haiku. I'm even afraid to run contests on them for fear somebody's going to jump on my ass. Just saying.
I love the haiku police.
Yeah, right?
Perfect.
This is great. I like that you stepped out of the box by going with a not dirty limerick. The meter is just spot on. It flows nicely. It's great wordplay. I especially like I am Bic Pentameter at the end, and I like the title too. I used to be someone who didn't care about titles, but the more I've been on All Poetry, the more I read other people's poems and write my own, the more they become important to me, because I feel like with this one, the title is as important of a part of the limerick, the poem, as the body of it. And you know where I stole it too, right? It sounds familiar.
You know where
I stole
the title?
Nope, I can't remember.
It's Romeo and Juliet. A rose by any other name would smell as sweet.
Ah, yes, okay. Very cool. I like that. So now when it comes to titles, do you usually write the poem first and then come up with a title, or do you just pretty much as you're writing just right away know what the title's going to be?
You know, I write the titles down when they occur to me, but I often change them after the fact. Things come to me after I've written a poem that didn't before. So I sort of go in with an idea that's provisional. And you know, I do think the title is important. You know, like that's another haiku police thing. You don't have a title on a haiku, right?
Right.
But I believe in titles. You know, I've become to believe in images, too. I didn't have the skill of being able to paste in images when I first started writing poems on AP, but I find that you know, you can find an image that really reinforces the idea of your words.
That is so true. Absolutely.
No, I think that's a great comment. 'Cause Cummings is my hero, and he never titled any of his poems, and that's kind of like my thumb at him is I always title my poems, and I agree with the value. But even like Nuno tonight, I think Nuno had some original artwork. Am I correct, Nuno, that you put with your poetry? Is that true?
Everything is a painting or a picture or whatever. It's by me. Yeah, I made it.
And so, yeah, I totally agree with what you just said, Keith. I think the imagery, it's not a crutch. It's an accentuation. And I'm growing to understand and appreciate that. And poets that do that and do it successfully, it comes across. So I think it's a great comment. I love that.
Well, you know, when we talk about opera, you're engaging, you know, as I said, you know, music and image and motion and, you know, all of the art forms. And it's unfortunate that most operas are in Italian or Portuguese, aren't they, Nuno?
What? Sorry?
Opera.
I don't know.
I was
jabbing you about Portuguese opera. Most of it's Italian, isn't it?
I think so, yeah. I'm not really into opera, but from what I've heard, yeah.
Yeah. German or Italian. We need to work on our opera here in the U.S.
No, and I love that you keep bringing that up because I think it's a beautiful art form that's underappreciated. So it's making me intrigued to appreciate it more. I mean, art is art, expression is expression, and when we can recognize that the heart is in it, especially when a fellow poet like you, Keith, is stressing it so much, it makes me want to pay more attention. So I appreciate you bringing it up so much like you're doing.
You know, putting on the Putin and the Blitz would have been more enjoyable if I could have sung it, for example.
Pam is always available. I'm telling you, Keith, she will sing any
we can
poem
do a duet.
In front of her. It's all Pam. I have an awful singing voice. Pam is a dove when it comes to singing.
Well, Jeremy, the day you write a German opera for me, I will sing it.
You better be up at 8 a.m. tomorrow morning because it will be in your inbox, my dear.
Wagner.
Whatever it takes. Whatever it takes. All right. Your next poem, Hope Springs Eternal, is up ready when you are, my friend.
This is a simple poem about a simple flower, a three-bladed lily-type flower that grows in the forests in the Northwest. And it's kind of an homage to my wife's cousin who died of cancer at a young age. And we built a memorial at Trillium Lake in the sort of the south slopes of Mount Hood. So this is kind of a personal poem. It's called Hope Springs Eternal. The trillium is the simplest thing, a snowy clover solitaire. But when she heralds a new spring, promise hovers in the air to stir the humblest heart to sing. Five lines, that's a little strange, isn't it?
I love the brevities. I love when poets bring the brevities because I want to talk about them. Go ahead. You get to start, though, Hope.
Yes, I liked your image, and I also enjoyed that it was a brevity. I think it's easy to write a long write, but to give a brevity, you have to have a skill to capture what it is that you're trying to put in such short lines, and I think you did really well. I like the images that you had, and it left me feeling like light and soft, hearing you say it and then reading it along with you. It left a nice, warm, soft feeling experiencing it through you.
Yeah, I'm particularly fond of the second line, a snowy clover solitaire. I think that's really the total description of this flower.
It's very beautiful.
Agreed. Hit him up, Pam.
Yeah, I think this is beautifully written. I like that it's a nice combination of imagery and that how it is a tribute to this flower, but it's also a tribute to your wife's cousin. And it speaks from the heart all the way through, but especially promise hovers in the air, you know, those unspoken words between people. Lovely write and very well done.
Wonderful
Thank
comment.
You.
Wonderful comment. Go ahead, Nuno.
He went out to have a smoke. Sorry.
That's quite all right. You know what, Keith? Brevities are tough. Tough for a discerning eye like myself, because I think that someone can feign a lot with brevities, but I took a lot out of this because you did a lot of moves that made me smile and give you huge thumbs up. First of all, the use of the word thing. I love when poets use the word thing because it's almost like a sigh, because you could do any thousand words to say anything, but when you say it's the simplest thing, it's like saying, okay, here's a rest for the reader. I don't know if I'm describing that right, but I love when people use the word thing in poetry because it's a sigh. I don't know how to describe it. I think you did a wonderful job with consonants in this poem. In the second, the clover, solitaire, and you did it in hovers and air, beyond just the fact that this is a rhyming set of a rhyming stanza, basically is what it is. You put some extra effort in the consonants, which I really enjoy. The biggest move that really made me dig this is the fact there's no capitalization. You started with no capitalization, and even after the period in the second, you continue without capitalization, and then you ended the poem without capitalization. So any kind of take out the author's note at the end, the solemn feeling that I got from this carried through. And the fact that you were able to do that with such short measure made me say bravo. I will be the biggest critic of brevities because you have to go and you have to try extra hard to make them touch, and this one touches. So I smile, my friend. The whole way through, everything you presented tonight, go ahead.
You know, your comment on thing, the bard's word was stuff. We are such stuff as dreams are made on.
Yep.
But they are similar words. They occupy the same place.
Yep. No, it's exactly that sentiment. No, I'm glad you picked up on that. Thank you for that. No, it's exactly true. You've been a pleasure. And to end this correctly, I want to go ahead and give you our famous question. I'm going to go ahead and step it to the oven, set it at 425, and I'm going to put in a casserole dish, 10 by 10 square, made out of glass. You get to fill it with whatever you want. It doesn't have to be edible. It doesn't have to be tangible. But I want to know what goes in the casserole dish that makes Keith Paltrow.
Cynicism.
It's a one-ingredient casserole. Is that what you're going to give me?
Well, yeah, I'm a microwave guy. I haven't cooked in years.
I love the answer, my friend. You've been a wonderful headliner.
Throw some carrots in the cynicism. Throw some carrots in there.
You've been a wonderful headliner. I want to give you. I want to give both you and Nuno a chance to sign off. So, do you have some closing words for us?
Nuno first.
Nuno, is he done with his cigarette yet?
Yeah, I am. Sorry.
All right, go ahead. No problem. Go ahead and sign us off, Nuno. Do you have some closing words for us?
Yeah. I put telemarketers in the casserole.
Nuno, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for joining us this evening. I've enjoyed speaking with you. It's been a long time coming, like I've said, and you are a wonderful headliner. Go ahead, Keith. What do you have to sign us off with?
Well, I guess I want to say that with all of its warts, AP has sort of proved to be a motivating medium for me. I don't know if it works the way on others, but I find it very motivating as I have no experience with other poetry sites, but I find that the thing works, strangely enough.
True enough. Very well put. The thing works. You guys made an awesome show. Thank you both for joining us. Pamrae, as always, you're a wonderful co-hostess. And thank you as well, Hope, for joining us once again, guys. Have a lovely evening.
Good night, all.